Welcome to Idaho Speaks, the place to learn about candidates and issues important to Idaho. My name is Ed, and I created this channel to overcome the media bias that plagues our communities and our state. When presented all the information, I believe you, the voter, will make the best decision for our future. At Idaho Speaks, we will give you the side of the story being hidden by mainstream media and big tech giants.
My name is David Worley, and I'm the Southeast Idaho interviewer for the Idaho Speaks team. Our goal is to give you, the voter, as much access as possible to the field of state and local candidates around Idaho. Ed and I both do interviews, so if you as a candidate find yourself in a situation where you need to speak directly to the voters and are having trouble getting through the mainstream media, please reach out and we will do our best to get you on the program. We want to give Republican and conservative candidates a platform to communicate their ideas in a long-form format so that you, the voter, has the best information available to make your choice on Election Day.
Idaho Speaks, your issues, your candidates, your state. Today's episode is supported in part by F1 for Help. They're my go-to computer repair techs. When anyone asks for computer help, I refer them to Joe at F1 for Help. Everyone I've ever referred to Joe has been very happy with the help. For all your computer repair needs, call Joe with F1 for Help at 208-687-0183. Tell Joe thank you for supporting Idaho Speaks.
So with me in studio today, I have the vice chairman of the Kootenai County Republican Central Committee, Rob Behrens. Rob, thank you so much for taking time to come talk with Idaho Speaks today.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
So, you know, one of the reasons that I wanted to talk with you is you're kind of like the architect behind the rating and vetting system. It just appears like the local media absolutely hates. But based on the last few elections where this system has been used, it's just been wildly successful. For the listeners' benefit, can you talk just a little bit about what is the rating and vetting system, and then we'll talk about how it came about and then how people can get involved.
Well, the vetting and rating system is we search for candidates for all the offices that are up for election. My committee is called the Recruitment Committee. It's our job to find good, qualified candidates that can be, in turn, passed to the Rating and Vetting Committee, where they're actually asked questions about off our questionnaire. So we're always at least one election ahead. So, for example, we started working on the May of 23 election back in September when the filing closed for the November election. And we'll work feverishly on this until probably March, because that's when the filing is for the May election. And the week after the March filing is over, we'll start working on the November election. So it's our job to try and find candidates for all the offices in Kootenai County, and some of those boards are shared across county lines. So, for example, the Plummer Worley School District is in Benoit and in Kootenai. The Kellogg School District is in Shoshone and in Kootenai. There's a water district, the Cataldo-Kingston water district that goes across the county lines. There's also a fire district that goes across the county lines. There's also a fire district from Harrison that goes across the county lines into Benoit. So we try to work with the central committees of those counties to try to find candidates where that particular board is in more than one county.
And, you know, we're going to talk about the actual seats that you're recruiting for right now, but let's kind of stay at 30,000 feet for just a moment here. Tell me about the type of people you're looking for and why you're looking for those type of people.
We're looking for conservatives who have a interest in the conservative values. Now, they don't necessarily have to be registered Republicans.
Yeah, because some of these seats are nonpartisan.
Most of the seats that we try to find candidates for are nonpartisan. We had a candidate a year ago that when she came before my committee was registered as unaffiliated. Since that point, she has registered as Republican. But now, for the nonpartisan offices, we don't require you to be a registered Republican. If we're talking about the partisan offices that occur every 2 years, then you have to be a registered Republican for that. Yes.
Well, and that totally makes sense. I mean, you're looking for people that have a conservative bent to run for office. I remember some years ago, I was asked to run for office. And I think what ran through my mind immediately was not just no, but oh, hell no. Why would I put myself through all of that public strife that's going on? What do you tell the candidates when you're recruiting them to get involved at this level?
We tell them that they need to step forward for the next generation, for their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren. We should be concerned about what's going to happen in our county, our state, and our country long after we're gone if we have children. That's one of the reasons why I'm involved. I've got 3 granddaughters, and I want them to grow up in a conservative state and nation. And that doesn't happen just by chance.
No, it takes a concerted effort, that is for sure. Let's talk a little bit about the seats that you're currently recruiting for in Kootenai County. What are some of the seats that you're looking for people to fill?
Well, there's basically 4 different types of seats in the May election. The first is a community library network. The next one is assuming that Kootenai Health will not try to go nonprofit. That's the second one. Third one is highway districts. And the one with the most offices is sewer and water districts. So those are the 4 that are on the ballot in May of 23.
I quote Tip O'Neill on this program a lot. Actually, it's the only quote from a Democrat like Tip O'Neill that I would quote, but I think it's a critical quote. Tip was famous for scuffling with Reagan. But he said all politics are local. Mm-hmm. And he's right. But can you talk a little bit about what does somebody serving on a water or sewer district, as an example, do? And how does that help your grandchildren by getting a conservative-minded individual on that board?
Well, the first thing is all of these offices are taxing districts. So everyone that is elected in May of 23 has the ability to raise your taxes. They're not required to, but they have the ability to raise your taxes. Idaho law allows up to 3% increase every year. So that's the first thing. Probably a more important thing, however, is that someone who has served on a water and sewer board has some experience to be then later considered for a school board, for a city council, possibly even a state representative, state senator. So it's kind of a, I would say, to use a baseball analogy, it's the minor leagues.
It's the farm leagues,
yeah. It's the farm leagues.
Yeah. Okay, well, that totally makes sense. When somebody is thinking about these very local seats, library board, water board, hospital district, I'm going to set that one aside for just a moment. We're going to talk about that. But what sort of time commitments should people take into consideration if they're going to think about going on one of these types of boards?
Well, usually most of the boards just meet once a month for about a two-hour session. And of course, according to Idaho law, they are open to the public. However, there's very few of them that even have any spectators or any people sitting in the audience.
Yeah, so it's not like you're going to be sitting in a forum with 1,000 people watching you.
Correct.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting you say that, you know, these are people with the authority to adjust taxes. And go back an election or two, a couple maybe, where one of the individuals that you folks rated and recruited, or recruited and rated, got elected to, I think it was a highway district. And I think that highway district actually decreased taxes, did they not?
They did.
And it turned out that everybody who was opposing that individual turned around and said, well, on second thought, maybe he was a pretty good choice. Or am I remembering that wrong?
That's pretty close to being correct. They lowered taxes 1%. So they could have went from 0% to 3%, but they went the opposite way, 1%. So there was a total swing of 4% potential.
And that's huge. I think some folks who, like me, once a tax is entered, it never goes away. That's kind of the adage. Never met a politician who didn't like a new tax. But here's a situation that really speaks to your thesis, in that getting good conservatives who believe in less government, capitalism, God and country, family, personal responsibility, all of these tenets that are truly Republican, truly conservative, they can make a difference in our overall costs and our overall state of living. In fact, I think they have a more direct impact than even the national levels. I mean, sure, they can raise our income taxes and levy some big bills against us, but there's nothing more direct than the local, right?
That's correct.
So, hospital district. Let's talk just a little bit about that. Off subject, but let me just ask, what do you think is the likelihood that Kootenai Health takes advantage of what the legislators did here this year in 2022 that allows them to go from a hospital district to a private nonprofit organization?
Well, I think if they listen to the citizens, they won't do that. Problem is that many elected officials, after they get elected, no longer listen to those that hired them. And it doesn't matter whether you're a sewer water district or you're the president of the United States. You were hired by the voters of whatever your area is. And I don't believe the present trustees are listening to the citizens of Kootenai County. Having said that, I've been told that the board or the CEO of Kootenai Health met with some of the employees of Kootenai Health and told them the deal was not going through. Now, I don't believe that for a second until I see it on a vote taken that says, no, we're not going to go nonprofit. So I think that it's probably still a 50-50 chance that it will go nonprofit. The citizens of this county don't want that, though. I'm sure there's a select few that want it, but I would say the vast majority of citizens do not want their hospital to go nonprofit for many reasons. Number one, they've spent tax dollars for 50 years to build up the hospital system we have. So if it goes nonprofit, what our tax dollars have been spent for have been lost. So it's a poor, in my opinion, a poor management decision to go nonprofit.
Gotcha. Tell me about the individuals, the type of individuals, the qualifications for the individuals that you're recruiting to run for those two seats. Again, assuming that those seats come open here next March.
Well,
or excuse me, next May.
Yeah. Legally, all we have to have is a person who's a registered voter. But that's not practical. There has to be some ability to know how to vote on the board if you're elected. So we are trying to search out medical professionals, not necessarily doctors, but someone who has worked in that industry, maybe as a nurse. You know, it could be a doctor, someone that maybe has worked at various positions at Kootenai Health. although if they're still there, they can't run. They are disqualified currently. They're disqualified from running for the board if they're an employee of the hospital. So we are looking for people who have expertise, maybe financial expertise. It might be a person who's not even a medical professional, but's been a CEO of or CFO of some company to know how to help the hospital manage their money better. I think that this whole thing that we've had the last 2 years that some people call a pandemic, and I call it a scamdemic because I think it was a scam. I think that has an adverse effect on our medical professionals. I mean, these guys are the guys who are in the trenches at the outbreak of this thing and working without any protection, so to speak. And then they're given the ultimatum, if you don't take the shot, and it's not a vaccine.
No, no, it at best, it might give you some potential recovery benefit, but no, it's not a vaccine. It doesn't prevent you from getting it.
57%, I heard this on a national radio program, 57% of those people who have died from COVID
had taken the shot.
Since the shot's been made available, had taken the shot.
Right.
Now, do we call it a flu vaccination? No, we call it a flu shot. What's the reason? Because you have to get one every year. So the COVID shot is not a vaccination. The left has redefined many terms through this pandemic, scamdemic. It's not a vaccination. So hospitals like Kootenai were under pressure from the federal government to require their employees to take the shot. And if they didn't, even though they'd worked for a year, 18 months without any protection, because they refused to take the shot, they were fired.
Wow.
And that has led to some of the major fiscal problems, in my opinion, that the hospital is going through.
Yeah, and you know, we look at this nationally, and I would imagine that some of the folks who are listening to us right now, they're frustrated, they're angry, they're frustrated. They feel helpless. They feel like, well, you know, how do you fight City Hall? You know, I was always raised, my mom would say, you can't fight City Hall. Well, I think what you guys are talking about is bringing the people into the local seats and bringing the conservative values to as many elected positions throughout the county as possible so that the nature of the community swings conservative, and then you don't have to fight City Hall. Or am I kind of misreading it?
Nope, that's correct.
So let's look at how somebody who's listening to us today, and they're just saying, you know, I might be interested in running for the library board, for instance. How do they get involved?
They send me an email. And my email address is vicechair@kcrcc.com. Very easy. vicechair@kcrcc.com.
And I'll include that in the show notes. And what do they put in the email?
They say, I'm interested in running for an office. They may have no idea what the office is. But it could be the library board.
Yeah, or they could just say, I'm interested in serving, and you'll help them find the best seat.
So then I call them, find out where they live, because depending on the office, you have to live in a certain area. I'll find out where they live. Here's an example. The post office has addresses that are not inside the city limits. For example, if you go across the Spokane River, those are all Coeur d'Alene addresses, but they're not in the city of Coeur d'Alene. If you go up in towards the hills on the other side of Dalton Gardens, those addresses are all Coeur d'Alene. And it's the same thing with Rathdrum or Post Falls. All the cities that we have in our county, there's addresses outside the city limits that are not part of the city. And people don't know that.
Right.
It's amazing. I work as a poll worker, and I have people come in when there's a city election, and they've got a Coeur d'Alene address. How come my ballot doesn't have city council on it? How come it doesn't have the mayor on it? Because you don't live in the city. Well, my address is Coeur d'Alene.
Right.
So there's a lot of people that don't know if they live in the unincorporated part of the county or if they live in the city limits of the county. So I get their address and we do a search through Kootenai Elections to find out if they live in the city or out of the city. Some of the offices, like highway districts, have sub-districts. And you have to live within the correct sub-district in order to run for that election. Same thing with school boards. They have zones. You have to live within that zone in order to run for zone 1 or zone 5 or whatever. So you first of all have to find out if they live someplace where there's an election. And most people do not know. I mean, they could take their property tax bill and look and see what taxes they're paying to what districts, and they could immediately see, oh, I live in this water district, or I live in this highway district, or I live, you know, in this school district.
But this is something you're going to do for them.
I will do that for them to find out where they live.
And you've actually put together quite a packet where you got a lot of maps, you got quite a bit of information already that that we're going to make available with the show notes as well. So, you know, those of you who are listening thinking, well, I'm not quite sure, I really live in the Hinter, is there actually anything available? You can go into the show notes, find your city, find the map that shows your address, and then that way when you email Rob, you kind of already have an idea. But even if you don't want to go through that process, just email Rob and get involved in the process. Now, you shared a story with me about an individual, we'll leave their names out just for a moment here, that started in the vetting system, and they were running for a local seat. And for whatever reason, they chose not to run for that particular seat. Can you share with the listener a little bit about that story?
Well, in our vetting and writing process, the first step is the recruitment committee. That's to find out if they are in fact qualified, if they live in the right spot. We have a 10-question questionnaire that they have to fill out. And once they've met with us, then their name and their questionnaire is passed to the rating and vetting committee. And they will call them in for an interview and ask some questions based on the answers to those 10 questions. Once that's done, then we set up a meet and greet prior to a central committee meeting where we put candidates around the room and we make sure that no two candidates from the same office are sitting next to each other because we don't want them hearing the other person's answers. And in fact, with their questionnaires, we post them on our website. We don't post them until after the filing is closed. We're not opposed to anyone reading their questionnaire because we put it on our website. But we don't want one candidate to have an advantage over another candidate for the same office. So we do that after filing closes. And we do this meet and greet. So this particular candidate was very qualified to run for the office we'd recruited him for. After the meet and greet, he came to me and said, I'm withdrawing my name. And that shocked me because he, in my opinion, he was probably the most qualified. He says, there's a more qualified candidate than myself is here for that office. So he withdrew. But I said, would you be willing to be open to any other seat in the future? And he said, most definitely. So when it come time to find candidates for the legislature in May's election of this year, we were, of course, working on that in December and November and December of last year. We approached him about running for a legislative position. And his response was, well, if you think I'm the best candidate, I would consider it. Well, we had another candidate who had talked to us about running for that seat, and he was a current legislator, and thought, you know, he'd be more qualified. He's got the experience as a legislator. But the last minute, he decided to drop out of that race and stay with his own race. Instead of moving up. So we contacted this candidate. And he said, sure. So he went through the process of being, you know, the committee, different committees. And when the central committee met to discuss who we were going to recommend, we don't endorse, but we recommend. The chairman of the vetting and writing committee gives a report on every candidate they've interviewed. And he was by far the best choice. And so the central committee voted to recommend him. And he won overwhelmingly.
Yeah, he won the primary, and then he went on to win the election, and now it's going to be serving in the legislature. So I think the moral of the story here is, just because there may not be a library or water district, sewer district seat available, if you're interested in serving, start the process, because you guys kind of keep the database and are always staying in touch with these folks for future seats. You know, and I think the moral of the story here is we need good conservatives to get involved. And sometimes it's a little hard to recruit people to run for office. And I think that's why you guys have put this whole system together. I've been watching it, you know, albeit from afar. I'm not a member of the Central Committee. I go to a few of the meetings, you know, 5 or 6 of the meetings every year, just so that I can keep an ear in there. But I hear grumblings around the state where this rating and vetting system is kind of being picked up by other central committees. Can you talk a little bit about how this rating and vetting system recruiting process is starting to have an impact regionally and statewide?
Well, I can use a particular county in mind. Shoshone County is a Democrat-controlled county. And that's because they have so many silver mines, and they're all union workers. Now, traditionally, union members are mostly Democrat. Not 100%, but mostly. And unions are concerned about their membership. They're not concerned about the general electorate. And so Shoshone County has had all 10 county officials, from their commissioners to their prosecutor, their treasurer, their coroner, you know, you name them all, have been Democrats. This last election, Shoshone County copied our vetting and rating system, and they had 2 conservative Republicans running for county commissioner. And in a dark blue county, both of them were elected. Now, in the state of Idaho, all the county commission boards are 3-person boards. So you can figure the math out. Mm-hmm. You win 2, you got a majority. So now the county commissioners in Shoshone County are being the commissioners are the ones that are administering the county, and they're the Republicans, conservatives. So that's an example of where this vetting system even works in a Democrat-controlled situation.
I think it's important to let me just inject here. I don't want to interrupt, but let me kind of inject it. I think it's important to understand what you guys are doing isn't a campaign ploy. This is a recruiting effort. This is, if again, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Correct me if I overstep. And what you're doing is you're looking for candidates that have good conservative principles. And then those candidates take those natural principles to the marketplace, political marketplace in this case, and they run as the people they are. And we're finding, not just in Kootenai County, but also in Shoshone County, where it's heavily blue, that conservative ideas win races.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So where else has the rating and vetting system started to migrate?
Well, the Canyon County Central Committee has implemented it. The Ada County Central Committee has implemented it. In some of the counties, a conservative caucus has implemented it because their central committee is not conservative. back probably in July, approximately 10 PCs from Spokane County came over to Kootenai County, met with Chairman Regan and myself to find out about this program. Their makeup there of their executive staff did not want to see a vetting and rating. So this the conservative group that came implemented it, and they saw some very positive results in their primary in August, which carried over into their general election this last November. Now, keep in mind, the slide of our government, the slide of our nation, hasn't occurred in 1 year. It's been a slide for many years. The Supreme Court has ruled in many cases not with the original intent of the founders, framers of our Constitution. And I believe if you want to change what the Constitution says, there's a mechanism for that. You amend it. For example, Idaho was one of, I believe, 8 states where the legislature, a co-equal branch of government, could not call themselves back into session. And we saw what happened with that over this past 2 years. There was no direction from the legislature, and that's the closest thing to the people,
right,
in the state government or the federal government, is the legislative body. But they couldn't call themselves back into session. So the citizens of Idaho changed that in the last election. They have voted a constitutional amendment allowing the legislature with a supermajority to call themselves back into session if there was an emergency. Up to that point, it was strictly at the discretion of one person, the governor. And I'm not picking on the current governor. That's the way our Constitution has been since 1890. The governor, who is supposed to be co-equal, executive branch is supposed to be co-equal with the legislative branch, had control except with the constitutional period when they met every year. And it shouldn't be that way. So the people voted to amend the Idaho Constitution. So, if you want to change the Constitution, there's a mechanism, whether it's the state Constitution or the federal Constitution. You amend it.
Yeah, don't use the court system to...
That's right.
...to implement your progressive ideology.
Yes.
So, let's pretend here for just a moment that we've got a group of individuals in, I don't know, Pocatello. I'll just use them as an example. And they're in a fairly liberal zone, and they want to start bringing more conservative principles to their region, and they're interested in implementing or at least looking at this rating and vetting system. How did they get connected with you, and what's the process for them to learn about your system?
Well, first of all, they can contact me, and we'll do what we can to help them. Now, if their central committee is not made up of conservatives, and their first target is the May 24 election, they need to start recruiting conservative people to run for PC. Because if I'm just using numbers, if you have 20 precincts in your county, and 12 of them are filled with PCs that are not conservative, you can't elect a conservative executive staff. But if you've got 20 precincts and 12 of them are conservative, you can elect a conservative county chairman and a conservative county vice chairman and so on through all the offices. And that's how they would implement this program, is by focusing on getting conservative PCs elected in the May of 24 election. Once that's done, you elect a conservative executive staff, and then you can implement this program for the next election. Up until that point, you can't do much about it, because if your executive staff says we're not in favor of a rating vetting system,
it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
So, well, based on results just from the last 3 or 4 elections that I've observed, the system works.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there's a lot of people out there that don't necessarily like the results of the rating and vetting system, but Those are the people who used to have control, and they're losing control because good, solid conservative people seem to be getting involved because of what the Kootenai County Republican Central Committee is doing to recruit. And bravo on you. This is a participation sport. You get good people into the system. I think our founding father said that we have a system of, for, and by the people. And if I understand what you're telling me correctly, you're working on recruiting those people who would otherwise kind of just sit at home and sit it out. And you're using just a little bit of effort to encourage them to get involved. Because without citizen involvement, without conservative citizen involvement, Idaho could go the way of Oregon or Colorado, mm-hmm. or the way Arizona is going. And I just believe a red state is better. So, Rob, I really appreciate you taking time to come on. Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share with the listener?
Well, I think that our founding fathers intended for all elected officials to be citizen legislators, citizen school board members. And I think after the first 150 years of our nation, that started to change, where we see career politicians. And a career politician is looking out for one individual, themselves. And that's why I believe the citizens should have term limits on every office. I don't think you should serve for a city councilman more than two terms, a school board member for more than two terms. And you can just pick any office. And that's why the Congress passed the Constitution Amendment to limit the terms to two terms for president, because one particular president broke the precedent that had been set by George Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that citizen legislators, citizen governors, citizen, you name it, should be limited to two terms. And the voters, if they're given a choice of term limiting the elected officials, in many cases will do it. And I'll give you one quick example and I'll be done. In the state legislature, last year we had 27 Republican senators. We've got 27 next January as well, next month. Except out of those 27 of them, 21 of them are new.
Wow.
Only six Republican senators are returning to the Senate. Now, some of those chose not to. Some of them chose to run for a higher office, but the vast majority of them were retired by the voters of their district. And I think that government should be for the people, by the people. And that means that every citizen gets involved. They don't just go at election time and vote, but they get involved on commissions at their city council. They get involved many other ways as a volunteer or possibly by being elected. And that's what I would like to see across this county, across this state, and across this nation. We don't need people to serve in the United States Senate for 40 years. 12 years is enough time. So let's get some qualified people in Kootenai County who can run for state offices and for federal offices, and start that process of term limiting by voting out incumbents that are only concerned about themselves.
Well, Rob, thank you so much. I think it's great what you're doing.
Thank you.
We've reached the end of the episode, but not the end of the issue. Please share this episode with your friends and family. If you have questions or would like to share your own issues and ideas, visit www.idahospeaks.com and click Share an Issue. Your state, your voice, Idaho Speaks.